Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today we have guest Colin Brownlee, and we're going to be taking a journey to Costa Rica, and I'll tell you a little bit about Colin. His journey from the big cities and gay communities of Vancouver and Toronto started when he attended a gay group adventure tour in Hawaii. The experience was life-changing, and he knew that he wanted his current path of a career in advertising and marketing to take a drastic change. This quest led him to discover the remote area of the Southern Caribbean of Costa Rica, where he bought a piece of beachfront land and opened a B&B starting with a one bedroom in 2006. Today, they have 25 rooms with a restaurant, a tour company, hair salon, and a supermarket, all combined with over 50 employees. That's quite impressive. This all started when he was in his early 40s, and now he's 61 and he wants to retire. He will sell his hotel, and it is his plan to stay in Costa Rica and focus on a new concept geared to retiring gay men 50 plus. He feels that while places like Costa Rica are not for everyone, they have a large appeal for those still looking for a sense of adventure and community in their lives. Stay tuned for Costa Rica's first residential country club, HESA.
HESA?
Oh, I said it wrong. Thank you for correcting. And we'll talk about Club HESA in a little bit. So just to tell you a little bit about Costa Rica, it's a rugged, rainforested Central American country with coastlines on the Caribbean and Pacific. Though its capital, San Jose, is home to cultural institutions like the pre-Columbian Gold Museum, Costa Rica is known for its beaches, volcanoes, and biodiversity. Roughly a quarter of its area is made up of protected jungle, teeming with wildlife, including spider monkeys and quetzal birds.
Quetzal, fi.
Thank you. All right, Colin, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. And tell our audience, what motivated you to move to Costa Rica, and why did you choose Costa Rica?
Well, first of all, thanks for the introduction. That was very accurate, and I'm happy to be here. I guess my experience prior to coming to Costa Rica was on the Big Island of Hawaii. And if anybody knows the Big Island of Hawaii, or just Hawaii in general, it offers a lot of the same sort of ingredients that Costa Rica has. And this was during, I can't remember, the 1990s, so during the George Bush era. And as a Canadian, I didn't really feel totally comfortable with the United States as a destination. And also Hawaii, while attractive to people on the Pacific, as far as flights go, is not exactly that attractive for where the bulk of tourism comes from, which is the East Coast of the United States and Canada. So the next choice was potentially Mexico, and Mexico was nice and everything and that. But then there was, to me, I was like, oh, but there's this other place called Costa Rica. And it's like, that just sounded so intriguing because it really wasn't, it's much on the radar then, and it was like, this is a whole new pioneering of a new area. So yeah, and then I did a lot of research on Costa Rica. It interested me, and then when I came here, it exceeded my expectations, and I continue with Costa Rica. Costa Rica is still an easy flight, easier than Hawaii, from the United States and Canada, and also it's in the same time zone and everything else, so it's quite a logical choice.
How many times did you actually visit before you decided? Do you remember?
About four, maybe. I was also very interested in the islands of Bocas del Toro, Panama, but after two visits, ruled out and Panama as a destination and chose Costa Rica.
Any reason for that?
Mainly the people, and that was in your overview of Costa Rica. Why I noticed one thing that was left out that people talk about Costa Rica is Costa Ricans are really friendly people, and it's interesting because Central America is not a big place and all these countries kind of melt into each other. But Costa Rica has been kind of immune to a lot of the problems that plague other countries in Central America. And I think it's largely in part in how they've just chosen to govern their country back in the 1950s and 60s. And also largely due to their partnership with the United States, which allowed them to do that. Had they not partnered with the U.S. in the way of defense and military and that, they wouldn't have been able to focus on not having an army and investing in education and healthcare and things like that.
Gotcha. So tell us, geographically speaking, where is Costa Rica located? And where within Costa Rica is San Jose and Manuel Antonio located?
Right. So Costa Rica is the country between Panama and the Nicaragua. And just so people know that after Panama, next stop is Colombia, which is South America. So you're right down by the equator. And then to the north, Nicaragua, which is also a beautiful country, but, you know, has its political problems. And so San Jose is in the middle of the country, which is 3,500 feet up from the coast, and it's called the Central Valley. So it's a sort of a bunch of mountains, and then the Central Valley, which includes outlying areas of San Jose, is tucked in up there, and that's where the hub of the country is. And then there's other areas throughout the country, and then you have your coasts. I'm on the Caribbean coast, the south, if like as the crow flies, 20 miles is the Panama border. So I'm right in the corner, south corner of Costa Rica. And the majority of people, tourists, and also gay people, go to the Pacific country, which, and more well-known is Manuel Antonio, which is kind of the center Pacific. And then you have North Pacific, which is Guanacaste province, which tends to be more arid and kind of California, Arizona-like terrain and climate.
So it sounds like there's all different types of climates depending upon which side that you're on.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the most amazing things about Costa Rica, too, is it's a really small country of only 5 million people, and yet there are microclimates of really... The only thing we're missing is snow, and you could get pretty close high up in the mountains, but it's not there yet. So, and it's really interesting, small place to be able to travel to these really unique climate and biodiverse locations.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like one part it's humid, one part it's a rainforest and humid, and the other part is dry and arid. It's quite interesting. I wonder why you mentioned the gays go to Manuel Antonio. I wonder why that is.
Well, I think it's pretty easy to pinpoint is because of Costa Rica and what it is, it's never had a really hostile relationship with gays and the gay community, despite being a Latin American Catholic dominated country, because they just don't run their country that way. And so they obviously had a gay bars in San Jose for a long time, so a long-standing gay community, and that liked to go to the beach. And Jaco was the main beach where all the Ticos went. And then he went further south, which was even more beautiful, was Manuel Antonio. And they had carved out very early on a nude beach. And we all know the nude beach will attract the gays. Not so much as nowadays, but back in our days, you would guaranteed. And like every standard nude beach, it was tucked away someplace where the police could not get to.
Right. It was only at the end.
So you were always fine. So that's what cemented Manuel Antonio as the gay destination. And during the AIDS crisis and everything in the 80s and 90s, it was extremely popular. A lot of these people living on their cashed-in insurance plans. And I have some friends actually that are still living who didn't plan on it that talk about those days in Manuel Antonio. And it was just full of all these people from North America and Europe living down there.
Wow. And for our audience's sake, San Jose is the capital?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's about a million people. And then, of course, when you put the outlying areas in, you're probably up to 1.5 million. So just to give you an idea how big it is.
So does San Jose itself have like a city?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Very typical Latin American city. They're not always the prettiest, but, you know, you can always find interesting art, Spanish colonial architecture and interesting parts in the city.
Gotcha. So for you, is living in an LGBTQ community important? And if so, did you choose to live in an LGBTQ neighborhood, if that exists, or is everything just diverse?
Well, that's the great thing about my life, is that it's been a constant adventure and experience. And for me, when I was younger, living in a big city in an LGBT community was really important, and I could never imagine a life outside of it. And then the AIDS crisis subsided, and we happened to get stronger rights and freedoms, and these also were felt around the world. So it became easier to step outside of this comfort zone and security that we used to be so important to us. And I actually came to the Caribbean coast, which is probably on the surface the most, would not be considered gay friendly. It has a very Caribbean, even Jamaican influence. So one, as a gay person, which I was very cautious about, it felt a little unsettling.
Yeah,
but it was interesting. Costa Ricans, true to form, are just not hostile people. And while the majority of them, especially in the Caribbean, might not approve of your lifestyle or your sexual orientation or whatever, they won't say anything about it. And that's the difference. And even me from Canada, we know that North Americans felt they wouldn't have a problem with saying something about your orientation if they felt compelled to. Whereas here, that would be rare because it would mean a possible confrontation, which they don't want to deal with.
They don't want to do.
No.
They don't want
it's
to
just
deal
like,
with it.
And also, this just because it's just like, oh, to them, their religion and lots of even evangelicalism down here and that, it's more of a social club than it is a movement. And
got it.
So that's our club. And as long as you don't bother us, we're good.
Right. So there's really no gayborhoods. It's kind of live and let live because the Costa Ricans don't want confrontation.
Yeah. But remember, that's my coast down in the Caribbean. So San Jose, the city, has, I guess you could call it a gayborhood. There are certain areas where more gays tend to live, but it wouldn't be like what we think of as a gayborhood. It sure ain't Fort Lauderdale right. Or Wilton Manors. But, you know, it's easy walkable distance to each of the gay bars, and there's a couple gay saunas and things like that. So it's got the ingredients of the important ingredients of a gay community.
So that was my next question. Gay bars. So do they exist on your side as well in the Caribbean side?
No, it's just too small. And also, combined with the trends in gay bars and everything, I just don't think it's going to exist because in 10 years, we probably won't even have any anymore.
Right.
The gay bar will be at your house.
Right. But Manuel Antonio, they have gay bars?
Yeah. Well, San Jose, yes. I can't remember how many, but yeah, they have. I don't know. It's interesting. They have what we think of as the club bars, and then they have these little hole-in-the-boil bars, which is where like local blue-collar people go, which is really the most interesting places to go, especially us as middle-aged, where we don't want to go to the club anymore and feel like the oldest person in the bar.
Right.
Is you can go to these little local places where everyone is welcome, and it just feels like the old days. And also get a real sense of real Costa Ricans, real gay Costa Ricans, and working class, real sort of, and not necessarily educated working class. And I always find it kind of fun with the odd time when I want to go out to a bar. That's where I want to go. I feel very comfortable at my age.
Yeah, that's great.
And then Manuel Antonio on the coast. The whole area is quite very popular. It's actually, I think, the number one tourist destination, popular tourist area in the country, in the whole area, because it was kind of founded on the you know, with the gay community, and that it's very gay friendly. So it's hard to say that there's a gay area. There's not really, but there is always at least one, if not two, gay bars. And I think right now maybe there's only one. But just the note is that the gay beach did disappear quite a while ago. And
where'd the gays go?
Well, they just kind of dispersed. I think there's still another beach that they go to, but I don't think it's – I haven't been there because I'm not going to crawl over the rocks to get there. But that I don't know if the nudity is still there, so I'll have to find out. But Costa Rica, I think, kind of fell off the LGBT map combined with the really increase in popularity of Puerto Vallarta, and who just kind of took over all the sort of
– yeah.
North American gay travel, and but now is reestablishing itself as an LGBT destination. But people tend to, yes, go to Mount Antonio, but also travel all over the country because it feels safe to do that. Right. Whereas during our days, you only went to gay places and gay hotels because that's where
exactly.
It was all the
you
fun
felt
and,
safe.
And you felt safe.
Yeah. Wow. So do you find it easy or difficult to make friends? Do you make friends mostly with expats, or are there locals that you make friends with? I mean, you've been there for quite some time. How many years have you been there now?
18 years.
18?
Yeah.
18.
Yeah. It's been, again, a real interesting journey and personal growth and everything. That's, I have local friends, expat friends, and gay friends. And it's, I make a joke here, but it's partly true. It's the only thing that Donald Trump ever said that made any sense to me. And when we talk about the expats that come to a country like this, we always joke and say they're not sending their best. And that doesn't mean the Americans have no monopoly on that.
Right.
I live in amongst crazy Canadians and Europeans and Argentinians and everything else as well. That's also part of what makes it interesting. But there's a political, psychological thing I don't really understand and found it hard to accept. And that is, many of these people come here because they're really kind of not prepared for retirement and want to come to a developing country because it's cheaper. And they also tend to be a little bit libertarian types and don't like running away from their government or the government. And a lot of it also anti-taxation. On top of that. And they also like to live sort of conservative values, like they talk about living off the grid and think they're so special. And it's like, well, how does that work for 7 billion people around on this planet?
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, I don't care. And that's like, yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah.
And so I just don't resonate well with that. And I find it very interesting that they are this libertarian type, which to me is kind of like Republican with a bong in this area. And they come to the most highly governed, highly taxed country in Central America. Of course, not Guatemala, Honduras, or Nicaragua, where there are no taxes. There's little government. And
hardly any services, I'm sure.
Yeah, but no. So it's really funny to watch and listen to them. And every once in a while, I like to poke a hole in their balloon just to see the reaction. But so that's been hard to sort of separate these people that I don't resonate with and find these people that I do. And the people that kind of come here with a passion beyond a cheap place or escaping their government or something like that, actually tend to be interesting people and do well here. They might be doing business, they might be nature buffs, they might be gardeners, they might be just people that just want to really relax or be adventurous. And those people are great, and I can relate to.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, you accomplished a lot of things. You came down here 18 years ago and opened up a place with one room, and now... Bought a cow field?
Included the cows. I didn't know how much money they were worth, and I gave them away to the caretaker. He was thrilled to death, and then I found out how much money they were worth, and I was thinking, gee, could I get them back? How do you ask for cows back?
And now you have 50 employees. That's really impressive.
Yeah, 50. I don't know. I think maybe 54 now, yeah.
And how many rooms now do you have?
25 rooms, and then we have a busy bar and restaurant and a supermarket, a gourmet supermarket, of course gourmet, and a hair salon and a tour company, and yeah. Yeah, we also own a small company just to help gays that want to travel here called Gaycations Costa Rica. And we have a longtime travel person who helps people want to organize a vacation here and stuff like that. People can do it on their own. It's quite easy. But if they want, some people want a person to help.
Somebody from the ground. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Congratulations. That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
So is it important for you to make community with other expats?
Yes, it is. And this is something that's really important because you come down here with a lot of ideas and ideals that you think you want, and then you find out and go, oh. So, you know, me coming from North America and I was in my early 40s, and I'm like, yeah, I want to travel and I want to be amongst other people and I'm tired of North Americans. I want to integrate with other cultures. And it's like, you know what? You're a North American. And when you're in New York, and you go to Chinatown and it's full of Chinese people. They live there. Why? Because they're Chinese and they feel very comfortable. And that's their culture. And we as non-Asians, fully understand it.
Right.
It makes perfect sense. Well, when you come down here, it's best to do the same. Because if you live in where there's no expats or North Americans, you really will feel lonely and a fish out of water. And it would be hard. I mean, there's people that can do it and are really able to do that. But I found out I'm definitely not one of them. And don't be embarrassed because you like to eat a hamburger. Don't be ashamed
right.
that you're North American. Of course, you'd like to eat a hamburger. That is really important because you are in a foreign country and where English is not the first language, and you will have lots of times where you feel lonely and you feel like people don't understand you. I can't relate to anyone. They can't relate to me. But if you don't isolate yourself, you won't have as much problem with that.
Oh, yeah. And you get culture shock no matter how you think about it. I mean, you move to a foreign country, there are things that are not done the way you've done them all your life. And you could run into that. You can definitely get culture shock. And it's pretty normal to do that.
Yeah. And also they speak English is not their first language. And most of them don't even speak English. And then the other thing is that you're on a whole different economic platform than they are. And so that's a really big division as well and causes, you know, separation and problems.
Yeah.
So just don't set yourself up for this type of isolation from your people.
Right.
And that too, like especially where I'm from, and thankfully it's changed, is my biggest complaint is that I miss my people and being on the Caribbean. But now that's not as bad. There's quite a few gay people living down here now, and then there's lots of people floating in and out. So that's not near as problematic. The other thing is I go regularly to San Jose, so I also have some access to gay culture there.
Culture, yeah.
Yeah.
So when you moved down 18 years ago, did you know Spanish?
No, I still
you
don't.
Didn't. So, but you get by.
Yeah, it's funny. The Costa Ricans call it, I speak Pachuco Spanish, right? And I call it survival Spanish. And I'm just one of those horrible North Americans that just refuse and too lazy to learn a second language. And I don't recommend it if people want to really enjoy what the country has to offer.
Right,
I encourage you to learn Spanish. It's funny, after 18 years, I'm back at Spanish lessons and I'm actually enjoying it because I'm doing it because I want to. And I want to understand my Costa Rican friends and Nicaraguan friends better. And so I know it's like you got to learn Spanish. You know,
I think that's great. Yeah. We're thinking about possibly moving to Europe in Spain. So my husband especially is learning. I'm pretty much, my time is pretty busy all the time. So I haven't had the opportunity to learn as much, but he's engaged in learning Spanish. So.
Oh, great. How's he learning it?
He does a Zoom with someone from Spain, a Spaniard, every week for an hour. I mean, he's a professional teacher, has his master's in language, and it gives him homework and everything. And every day, you know, that he's not with the teacher or not, he's studying on his own and listening to podcasts, listening to all sorts of YouTubes and stuff like that. So I really give him kudos for doing that.
Yeah. And nowadays with the internet and Zoom and everything, there's these really great services.
Yeah.
I subscribe to one called iTalki.
Yeah, and me too.
Yeah.
That's what he does. In fact, that's what he does.
For $10 an hour, I get a Spanish teacher.
Right.
And who's very competent and patient and fun to be with. And then I combine it with Duolingo, the upgraded version, in between lessons. And it's amazing how much, and it's $10 a week. I mean, hello.
Right.
Yeah. And it's you have a teacher with his undivided attention. So, and then, of course, if you're immersed in the culture, then you're out there trying to use your Spanish as well. And so
I think that's great. Yeah. So I did one like introductory lesson. I think I have two more to go. My husband's been using iTalki every week.
And just one piece of advice for people who, because you know, Duolingo is very popular, is spend the money. It's only $60 a year for the upgraded version. It's really worth it. And you will be way more engaged with the app because they introduce all these other different learning approaches with the app. And so it's really worth it. And I really highly recommend that.
Good to know, because I'm still on the free version.
Yeah, everyone is.
Yeah. All right. So I guess speaking Spanish is a must because most Costa Ricans, that's the only language.
You know what? I want to correct you on that. It's not a must because there's going to be old people like me and you who are just kind of resistant to it. And so it's not a deal killer. I just think it's going to make your experience better. But you can get by and you sort of find local people. There's lots of local people that are local Costa Rican that speak English and stuff like that. And you're just going to miss a big chunk of it. And then you're going to have some difficulty doing certain things. But you also learn to deal with that. You always have good bilingual friends that you bring along that help you with those things. So you can do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So tell the audience, what is the local economy like? What is real estate prices like, renting versus buying? Some examples of electric bills, water bills.
Right. So a couple things. First of all, it's really imperative that people do this. Of course, I didn't do it, but people should do it and highly recommend it. This is a big change and it's really not for everybody. And you need to find out if that's you are one of those people. And now with Airbnb and VRBO.com and all this other stuff and the internet, you can find a very decent quality rental with and be able to experience what it would be like to live in the country and live in certain areas without buying the farm. And and I highly recommend it. And I think that people should do it for at least 6 months. And if you've got a place in the States and everything, don't sell it or anything. Just rent it out, which will cover more than cover your costs of whatever you're doing in Costa Rica. So you could get something really in the Central Valley. You could get something really decent, like really nice for $1,500 a month. You could get budget. I used to rent a place for like nice, decent three-bedroom place in the area for $800 a month. So that was unfurnished. So, but $1,500 a month furnished in the Central Valley. Outside the Central Valley, it could even be $1,000 a month.
Will that get you like two or three bedrooms?
Yeah, two or three.
Two bath?
Yeah, usually, yes. Or, one and a half, or two, depending. And it would be furnished, of course, as well. And, of course, if you want, you could, $2,000 would get you something really quite nice. And now there's all these condos everywhere that didn't used to be there that are everywhere and full of people bought them as investment properties and trying to rent them out. So the prices are not reasonable.
Mm-hmm. How about bills? Well, do they have air conditioning?
Yeah. Well, first of all, in the Central Valley, most people don't have air conditioning because you're up about 3,500 feet. So it's definitely cool at night. and in the daytime it's not usually that hot, and people are fine with it. I'm one of these people who likes to sleep with AC, so I want an AC in the bedroom. But it's
You're North American.
Yeah, exactly. But I lived here, especially on the coast where it's hot, for years without it, and lots of people do. So give me an idea, like my house here, I live on the coast, and I have a small two-bedroom house here, and I have air conditioning usually going just in the room that I'm in, and I would say my total electric bill is about $120 a month, somewhere around there.
And, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but the thing, not a big electric consumer. City in Latin America, in Costa Rica, is expensive. Even though we get almost all of our electricity from renewable resource through hydroelectric, it's a way of taxing people.
Yeah.
And then poor people who don't use much electricity don't pay much, and rich people who use a lot pay a lot. So it's
a lot.
It's very democratic.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see. And here in the U.S., people complain of high electricity prices, but I've been talking to people around the world, and the U.S., I mean, it may be high, but it's not as high as Europe or
Latin America. Most North Americans don't realize, I mean, especially Americans, is how much your country is subsidized. And like airline tickets are cheap. Why? Because the federal government pays for the airports. Well, in Canada, they don't. They put it on the ticket. Well, guess what? The prices of air transport in Canada are huge, way more expensive. And the subsidies for corn and all of those things, and oil and everything, you know, that the price of
gas prices
is way higher than almost any country than North America, than United States. And so they come to a country like this and they go, oh my God, it's so expensive. And it's like, yeah, because we're paying real world prices. You're not. And right. And now you know what real world prices are. So just, do you want to touch upon the cost of Costa Rica?
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, being a developing country, most people expect it to be a lot cheaper. And I can see why they expect that, because they go to Mexico and they go to other countries and everything. And the difference is that Costa Rica citizens live a much higher standard of living overall than most of these countries. So when you go look at the comparisons to Mexico and everything, Costa Ricans overall live a higher standard of living. Well, all that costs money. And they have education and healthcare and things like that. And so they do it in the form of course, consumption taxes, right? Because income tax is not really big here. They're just getting into it for the higher end. But of course, most people don't make enough that you can really tax them, right?
Right.
So they get consumption taxes. So you take a small country like Costa Rica, they don't really produce much, right? And so almost everything's imported, right? And it is pretty standard to pay about a 30% tax on that. So when you go buy that box of cornflakes, it was imported from the United States.
It's plus
the shipping.
Wow.
So now we're at close to 50% more. Right.
Wow.
And the moral of the story is don't eat cornflakes.
You know, right. And eat locals.
Exactly. And find things that were made either locally or coming from maybe, you know, Colombia or something like that, or Mexico.
Somewhere nearby.
And let go of the brands that you're used to. And
Skippy.
Yeah, most people do that. And then also, we're usually in a position that we can afford to indulge too, and don't be afraid to indulge as well. So it is expensive, and if cost is really an issue for you, for some people it really is, that places like Mexico and stuff like that might be better. A better solution.
You know what the cost of gasoline is by the gallon?
I'm not sure, but I know it's at least $6.
Do you drive?
Yeah, I do, but you know, I never fill the tank. I have staff that does that. So, okay. And I don't even drive anymore. They drive for me too, so it's really nice.
Well.
Yeah, I know. But that's the joys of running a hotel. That's the only reason you own one, is because you can have staff do things for you.
Do everything for you. That's great.
Yeah, I know, and that's going to be over. So, But I know it is expensive. But again, when you live here, you just live so differently than a North American. Like once you've gotten over sort of letting go your attachments to things and stuff like right. that, you start to live more locally. And it's like, what does it really matter, the cost of gas? I don't really drive that much anyway. So yeah, it kind of pushed the price of things up and everything. But I eat much more locally these days. I go to the farmer's market on the weekends and everything's so cheap. And because it's all produced all locally. And then and we don't care. We don't have to buy clothes to impress anybody or anything like that.
It's different than here.
It's very different.
Yeah.
If I have to put on a pair of laced shoes, I feel like I can't walk because it's been so long. Or even I'm one of those horrible gringos that wears
flip-flops
and shorts all the time because it's just so easy and comfortable. But, you know, the Costa Ricans just look at you, oh, don't dress like a gringo because they're more formal. And they've listened to that, but especially when I first moved here, my Tico partner had a real problem with getting on the bus with me because it was just like, oh, my God.
Oh my God, look what he's wearing.
Yeah, we're just on a public. We're on a
public. I don't want to sit there.
Yeah.
Tell us about the climate. On the Pacific side, it's real rainforesty. I'm trying to picture tropical trees with monkeys all over the place and banana trees and stuff like that. Is that?
Well, like I said earlier, Costa Rica is the great place because we got it all. And the only thing we're missing is snow. And ice,
right? Okay?
Which is probably good, but I, as a Canadian, I miss it once in a while. So you take the North Pacific, which is called Guanacaste Province, and it is very popular, especially these days, amongst like the playground for the rich, the Silicon Valley type, and everything like that. And it's very sort of Arizona, California like, and you're not as much green. And dry, hot, and then it has a rainy season, which is very rainy, and then a dry season, which is very dry.
Is okay. summer rain the rain rainy season?
The rainy season, yeah, starts from like July and goes through the October, right? And with kind of September and October being the worst. And then it goes November, it starts to go into its dry season, right into tourist season. So then you go south of there, to the Punta Arenas province, right, which is also still the Pacific coast, but it's kind of halfway down, and it gets into a more wet climate, and that's where Manuel Antonio is, and it's much more green and jungly and pretty, and well, my idea pretty. Lots of people like the Arizona type arid, and I get it too, and especially when I go there and I realize, oh my God, it's 100 degrees, but it doesn't feel that hot. Right. And yet when I come to my place, it's 100 degrees, like, ugh. So because it's humid. So, but I just like the green. I just really like the green. So there you get into a much more very tropical environment with, yes, it's lots of monkeys. And then, but also those beautiful quetzals and the red macaws and, you know, everything you can imagine, the frogs and the sloths and all of those fun things that Costa Rica is known for.
They must keep you awake at night.
Yeah, some of them can, especially the howler monkeys. Yeah, really can be. They're all fun for a couple of days.
And then you get lost.
Yeah, because they start at 3:30 in the morning.
Oh, is that when they wake up?
Yeah. Oh. So, and they could be right above your house in the trees. So then you go into the mountains, and it's quite cool, but can usually also, because you're in the mountains, tend to have a bit more rainfall or sometimes a lot more rainfall. But are also just stunningly beautiful who people who want mountain, the vistas and the rolling hills and farmlands and forests and jungles and all of that is just really quite amazing. And the waterfalls and all that's really quite amazing. And volcanoes too.
So since it's tropical, do they get rain like every day?
Some places do. I can't think of... Take something like Manuel Antonio that's quite tropical. In the rain season, yes, it would get rain every day. But that doesn't mean continuous all day. That means certain times and you can see it coming and it almost just comes like, oh, it's going to rain and you just like run for cover and then and people just wait it out and then they're back. And
Sort of like Florida.
Yeah. So, and then you get the Central Valley, which is people think is the most perfect climate because it tends to be like 70, 80s all year round and in Fahrenheit. And but then it also has a rainy season, which can be quite dark and wet. The great thing, the Caribbean, South Caribbean, which is where I live, the town of Puerto Viejo, but the whole South Caribbean, in the rainy season of the Pacific and San Jose, it's our dry season. So you just take the September and October that we just had, which was quite rainy, some record rains on the Pacific and San Jose. We were just like record dry. And and so consequently for the hotel, it was like it was high season. I mean, we were just so busy from Ticos, expats, and what tourists were coming. They all knew you got to go to the Caribbean.
When and you say Ticos, what is that?
Costa Ricans. Yeah, they call them Ticos, yeah. Ticos. And then if you're referring to, of course, a female Tico, it's a Tica. There's a little Spanish lesson for the day.
Thank you. Oh, how about any arts and culture?
I'm not the person to ask about that. I mean, my idea of our art and culture would still be a strip show at Pucho's. So I'm not the best person to ask about that. But yeah, in San Jose, there's the theater and there are some museums. I'm not sure how good they are. And there are more and more cultural events. And the odd time when somebody drags me along to one, I do enjoy it. But, you know, lots of, this is Latin America. Their idea of a cultural event is a big party. Or loud party. Yeah.
But do they do like concerts like in Mexico? They do little concerts in the street?
Yeah, not so much that. But they just have any excuse to kind of party and make a lot of noise. I mean, it's very loud. And for us Canadians, we're very little bit more subdued and considered boring. It's just like, oh my God. So
it's quite loud.
Yes, but if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen because it ain't going to change.
Right, know? Right. So how is the food scene? Are you a foodie? Are there restaurants? Any?
Well,
really high-end restaurants.
If you think of, if you're a foodie and you're into food, it's like ask yourself, how many world-renowned Costa Rican chefs are there? You know, none you
can
think of.
Don't know of any.
Right. And you know, on the food scene, a culinary scene, when do you ever see Costa Rican food represented?
Never.
Yeah, exactly. So start there.
So you have a restaurant. What kind of restaurant?
Yeah. Mostly it's a North American food. It's a very typical bar and grill. Local food is, when I was one of those really naive North Americans. It's like, oh, it's Latin America. It's going to be like Mexican food. No, it's not. And Mexican food is very world renowned.
Right.
And very, for us, like lots of taste and everything like that. Yeah, it's very good. Costa Rican food is not like that. It tends to be lots of rice and beans with chicken and then chicken with rice and beans and fish and a kind of chewy beef and vegetables. But a lot of it can tend to be root vegetables like yuca or sweet potato and potatoes, but also lots of rice. And then, of course, beans. And it's good when I want to go for Costa Rican food or Costa Rican breakfast. And I like it and that. But most of us don't eat that all the time.
Do you miss North American food?
But the thing is now it's really easy to access that. And over the years, unfortunately, there's more and more chains, which I don't like to see because it takes away from the... And it's unhealthy eating for the most part. But now there's also there's all types of restaurants with different nationalities and cuisines and everything. So it's very easy to access. The other good thing about food here, it's very fresh. Like, if you buy any vegetables or fruit, in 2 days, you can almost be guaranteed you can't eat it because it's turned already.
Yeah.
And that's just the way fruits and vegetables are here. And so it's very fresh. And because imports are so expensive and processed, which are processed foods, right? You tend not to buy them. And nobody wants to pay $8 for a box of cornflakes, even if you have the money. You don't.
Right.
So you just tend to eat, and you're eating fresher food. And so when you look at why Costa Ricans live longer than Americans, and part of it is the healthcare system, but it's pretty clear that they just don't eat, you just don't eat as much processed foods because they can grow anything here.
And they probably have small refrigerators, unlike the U.S., where they have these humongo refrigerators with freezers and they go to Costco and buy all of this stuff. Probably the way I picture it in Costa Rica, they probably have small refrigerators that could fit a day or two of food from the local market.
Exactly. You would never see a Costa Rican with a two-door refrigerator. Okay. That would just be unheard of.
Right. You
know what I mean? You'd have to be in a very rich family with a bunch of kids around. You know what I mean? I mean,
and here, they look at you like, if you don't have one,
exactly.
You're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. And I think to myself, oh my God, why don't I have a two-door refrigerator? And because I would never, ever use it.
Yeah.
And that is a really important thing, I think, for people thinking about retiring, is eating fresh
foods.
Healthy foods.
Yeah.
Because there ain't.
You'll live longer.
You'll live longer and you'll feel better. And
yeah.
So that's something to consider. The markets, these farmers markets, right? Every community has them. They're always on the weekend and they're very cheap and they're very, always a cultural experience and they're never sort of really boring. They're but they're not like North American farmers markets where they're so high end and expensive. You just don't see that here. It's exactly the opposite.
I'm actually looking forward to my trip outside of the U.S. to Europe just for the fact that if I'm going to be gone a month, I'm wondering how my insides are going to enjoy the fresh foods that I'm eating and not any of these processed. Even though I try not to eat processed food, even the fruits and vegetables here are like sprayed with stuff, and if you don't get it organic. So I'm really curious on how I feel spending a month outside of the country.
Europeans, you're going to Spain, right?
And Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, tend to eat better diets than North Americans. And I don't, just to warn you, I don't think it's something that you immediately embrace. It's just something over time that you just get used to. But then bring in some good American processed food, and I love it because it's a real treat for me, and it's so tasty, and it's meant to be that way.
Right, because you don't have it.
Yeah. It's funny. I own a supermarket, and we have a lot of North American, because it's gourmet, so that means imported stuff, which a lot of it's North American.
Yeah,
and I have, I'm an ice cream freak, and I have Häagen-Dazs there, but I just don't. Mainly because I know it's not good for me. And I just continue to just get some of the basic stuff out of my own supermarket because I can't, at this age, I shouldn't be eating that way.
Good for you. Good for you. Kudos to you. So tell us about, is there any such thing as traffic, or do they have any public transportation in Costa Rica?
Well, first of all, if there's people that come here on a budget, and bus transportation is basically, it's a little basic, but average Costa Ricans use it. And it's, so you wouldn't, I remember one time I went into a Greyhound station in Seattle, and I thought, oh my God, it was kind of really scary, right? And that's not the thing here. It's just, it's where the average sort of working class Costa Ricans would travel. And so it's fine. Of course, it's a bus station and everything. You need to watch your bags and things like that. And it's not something, even now, I wouldn't bother me to travel on the bus. So that's fine. And getting from city to city, that's fine too. But there's also these tourist shuttles that go everywhere. And especially if you're a resident, you can get a resident rate and they're not that expensive.
Do you need a car if you're living in town?
If you're living in San Jose, you can get by without a car because Uber works really well.
Right.
And I know lots of people that don't have a car. And so that's fine. But if you're living outside, it's really kind of ideal.
Need a car.
But some people like to be just trapped on their little farm and are fine with that and go with a neighbor or something once a week to the local area and then have their own little drivers in the area that drive them places. That can work for people too, but probably you would want a car. And cars are expensive.
Oh yeah.
Because remember, they're imported, and so then used cars are desirable because people can't afford new ones, and so they're higher priced, and then you got the price of gas and all that.
Do they drive automatics there or manual?
It's slowly switching to automatic, and but again, you'll pay more for an automatic than a manual. So just, I now am on automatic, and I like it much better just because.
But you get driven anyway.
Yeah, I get driven anyway. So the odd time, I'm like, let me take over the wheel.
Do they have traffic? Is there
some traffic? Insano's really kind of gross, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, because these cities were never planned to be big. And once you start installing the traffic system later versus it's a problem. So I have a really good solution for being stuck in traffic. And I go to the Spotify channel and put on the comedy channel, whatever, Spotify. I go to Spotify and put on, a comedy, latest comedy podcast. And it just totally takes away all my road rage, and it works really well. So,
change the channel on Spotify to Where Do Gays Retire podcast and listen to us.
Exactly. I'll set for my long distance driving.
Yes, they are. Some of them are quite lengthy. So, if you're still working, is it important to live by work, or in this day and age, since COVID? A lot of people just work from home, which brings to another question, how's the internet's reception?
Right. Well, first of all, if people are coming to Costa Rica, expats, and you need to work, you better hope for work outside of Costa Rica because the rate of pay here would not be appealing. So you would not, you'd want to have a job online or something like that because, or own your own small business or something because, like I said, the rate of pay would not be appealing. And yeah, if you had to go to somewhere for work, I guess you'd ideally would want to live somewhat close to it because the commute would not be fun. And it's just, and also, I guess for me, I've lived outside of North America for so long and outside of a big city. When I get into and I look at these people commuting, I'm like, oh my God, how do people do that? I just can't even imagine.
Like two hours a day.
Yeah. And see, it's to me,
2 hours each way a day.
Yeah. And to me, that's just so unfathomable. Because even when I lived in Vancouver and Toronto, I lived in the center of town and walked to work. So, or subway, a quick subway ride or something like that. So,
yeah. Gotcha. How's the internet?
It's quite good. Yeah, it can. Here I am. I'm on the remote coast of the Caribbean, and you and I are doing pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it can drop once in a while, but it's getting better all the time. And in fact, I'm moving to a new company with internet, which offers asymmetrical connections, which means like the equal download and upload. And I'm expecting that my internet will be even better. And that, but I would say it's about 80% of North American standards. So,
how much do you pay for like Wi-Fi, cable, phone, cell phone, all that stuff?
Standard home connection with Wi-Fi is about $35.
Oh my, so cheap!
Yeah, that's a standard home connection, and then cell phone. What most people do here is buy prepaid packages. So, and then it's quite cheap. It could be $20 a month. You know what I mean? For all the actual calls you're going to make and stuff like that. And that'll get you a data package and a voice package. And again, you just use it until it runs out. And then you can go into any store or any banking, your online banking, and just add more money to your phone. You know what I mean? So it's pretty easy. Pretty cheap.
And cheap.
Yeah.
What's the crime like in Costa Rica?
Well, that's always an interesting subject. And it's funny because it depends who you talk to. And again, Americans are a unique, even that's the bulk of the people that come here for living here and traveling, is they come from a country that's really obsessed about crime. Like all of their TV shows and movies and everything, it's all about crime. And it's funny. And I listen to them, especially with tourists and everything, and they'll be like, oh, I've been doing this research, and in your area, I see there's all this crime. Right. And I'm like thinking, yeah, I used to be from Vancouver. And if I did research on the internet about crime, guess what? I would find lots of crime.
Yeah.
But I never think of doing those searches. It's just like, okay, I'm going to go to Thailand. I don't do a search in Thailand about crime.
Right.
But a lot of Americans would. Right. And or I'll be going to Bangkok and I will do a search about crime. Is crime there? Of course it's there. Is it more than North America? Absolutely. Probably it's Bangkok. So it's just a really different thing. Now, on that subject, yes, this is Latin America. And all of Latin America is a shit show and usually has lots of crime. The only thing different about Costa Rica, it's less of a shit show than most of Latin America.
Gotcha.
So, but you're in a country that's a developing country, and you're also in drug trafficking alley. How much of drugs go through Central America and on their route to North America or to ports and going abroad and everything? It's quite the things is that you, if you're not involved in that, it's really invisible. You really don't see it. It's not like you'll see in the news that there's crime related to drug trafficking and everything, but it doesn't really affect you. You know what I mean?
And are guns outlawed?
No, they're not, but they're not gun obsessed like North Americans. But it's pretty strict permitting, and there'll be no open carry or anything like that. And if you're caught, like Canada, if you're caught with an unregistered handgun or something like that, you're in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And so, yes, that is good, except a lot of the criminals, that's not a problem. Yes, when you look at the overall crime rate, it's higher than North America, but you can't compare United States to Costa Rica because you're talking a 5 million versus a 360 million. If you took pockets of the U.S., yes, the crime could exceed way more than Costa Rica. If you took other parts of the U.S., the crime would be lower. And everyone has their risk tolerance, right? And I know my risk tolerance is higher than a lot of my friends in Canada and everything. So I have to sort of balance that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I, you know, what I try and do when I'm wondering whether things are or not, I say, well, how would I feel if my sister went walking down that street by herself? You know, I'm with that, right? Because I know what to do. But I'm like, would I be with my sister doing that? No, probably not. Not that straight. So that's what I try and do. And yeah, but I didn't come here looking for a safe life. I didn't want an unsafe one either. But I was tested. I thought, handle that. But I'm not going to sit in front of CNN and be freaked out to go anywhere. I don't want a life like that. And there are tons of people in North America, that's what there's like.
Yeah.
You're going to Spain. Do research on crime in Barcelona. Oh, my God. There's one other thing I'd like to bring up about crime that I think people should really think about. Back in the dot-bomb era of 2000, right? Remember where we were all going to be rich off the internet?
And
we were all day trading stocks and everything like that. And thought we were day traders. And well, I lost personally about $80,000, right? And which was most of what I had. And when you look at it, I was invested in basically fraudulent companies. It was totally pump and dump schemes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you look at even how the world interest rate works. It's some of it's through criminal activity about how they change and even what banking gets away with and stuff is even, they can't put anyone in jail because there's no one to actually prosecute, right? But it's still theft no matter how you slice it. All right?
Yeah.
Well, so that's in North America. They just take your 401k and your investments and everything else and it's just like, and everyone's, you know, here, if they took your computer, you're all freaked out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You go crazy.
Right.
And it's because it feels personal. Whereas somebody just took my retirement savings and it's just like, oh, well, nobody really stole it. It just kind of evaporated.
But
someone stole it.
Stole it.
It just wasn't prosecutable.
Right.
But if you dug down deep enough, it's like, oh, yeah, there was a lot of crap going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So people have to really get their head around what their idea of crime is. And do I feel unsafe? No. If I went into certain areas, do I feel unsafe? I could.
Just like anywhere else.
Yeah. I've been mugged 3 times in my life, and once was in Europe and twice was in the United States. And okay. Because I crawl around places at night where I shouldn't be. Do I think that United States is a dangerous place and I shouldn't go there? Absolutely not. I, you know, was doing things that were probably not a good idea. So have I been robbed of things? Yes, I've had my car broken into, and I've had things. I did have once my house broken into. But if I added it up over the years compared to what I lost in Vancouver, plus the money I paid for insurance and everything, I'm still ahead in Costa Rica.
Gotcha. You know?
So that's how I look at it.
That's a good comparison. Absolutely.
One other thing to note, though, on the crime subject, and I guess this is appropriate since we're gay men, and that's important. It's easy to sort of, especially if you're single, to like to indulge with some of the Latino guys, and they like us. They're not as age phobic and that. And if you don't know this person or don't have some sort of reference as to what type of the person this is, you shouldn't bring them into your home. That's just not considered wise. You would go to a hotel room or something like that But and that's just standard practice in Latin America. And when I first was here, I just thought, oh, that's really crazy. And I just thought they were overly paranoid. And I realized, oh, no, that's a good idea.
You don't want people to know where you are.
And also, you could be a victim of crime.
Right.
You could very well be a victim of crime. And especially
for that matter, you can be in a hotel too. But
yeah, but usually, though, that decent hotels will you'll make fill out registration. They have to have ID and all this sort of stuff. And
yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
That's a good point. Absolutely. Yeah. Tell us about the health care. Are there a sufficient amount of doctors to patients?
Yes. Well, that depends on public or private. Because remember, we have both. So of course, private, yes, and public, no. So public system is like Canada, which I wouldn't trade for over a U.S. system any day, because at least everyone has equal access to it. And then you can also look at countries that have public healthcare system versus like the United States that has a private system and little public. And people tend to live longer on average than the Americans, which is the richest country in the world. And you're thinking, well, public healthcare might have something to do with that.
Yeah.
And also, when you have public health care, they enact public health policies that tend to help keep people healthier.
Now, in the public system, how does that work? Do you pay taxes and that pays everything in the public system?
Yeah. Right. Well,
or Social Security?
Yeah. You usually pay it with your job, and employer pays the bulk of the premium, right? And the employee pays the minor part of the premium. So, and then if you're an expat coming here, you would pay it based on your income. And so a lot of expats will come here on a pension and, you know, that, and I'm not sure what it is, but, you know, most expats don't pay more than a couple $100 a month, which would include your spouse.
That makes sense. Is that public or private?
That'd be public. And so it's not free, but it is a universal health. And it's also, as a foreigner expat, it's mandated. You have to pay this. Not really supposed to be here without healthcare.
How long do you have to wait for a doctor in the public system?
Do you know, first of all, if you need to see somebody, you just go to a clinic and you can see somebody. But then if you need to get referred to somebody, it could be a while. And I'm not a good person to answer that, because I just go hire somebody private. Standard visit for a doctor would be like $60, and maximum of 100 of some big specialist or something like that, right? So for me, it just, I just, it's a lot of people, like like I'll go to my private doctor, right? And he's like $60 or whatever, and he'll order tests, right? Like blood tests. So then I'll go put those through the, I'll go to the clinic and get them put through the public system, right? And then so I don't have to pay for the blood tests. And then I will go back to him, which is included actually in my initial visit for the analysis. And so a lot of people do that. You work public and private together. And
you pay out of pocket for the private?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Who would pay?
Or they have private insurance that you can also
Yeah. They have private insurance, which is what's called the INS, which is the Institute of National Insurance, or Seguridad, which is insurance, which is the pretty standard one and that people use, which is the put out by the Costa Rican government, right? And then they have all of these other companies that cover, that have similar plans. I have a private plan, and again, that I hardly ever use because I just pay out of pocket. It's just so much easier, but I have it there just for catastrophic. And now that I'm 60, it's about $2,500. And I can't remember what all the stuff it covers. But
and how about hospitals? Do they have decent hospitals where you can
yes,
go through?
That, and having the private insurance would get you into pretty North American style standard private hospital. And but, you know, the public hospitals, except in like my area, which is not the greatest area, but in San Jose, are not horrific or anything like that either. My ex Tico's partner, I used to go visit his mom there all the time, and I just thought, you know, this is, it's not quite Canada, but it wasn't, I wouldn't be upset to have my mother there, you know what
right.
I mean? Yeah, so
that's a good, yeah.
But then I've also been a bit Latina-wise, so.
So what do you wish that was in Costa Rica that you don't have or that you may have had in Canada? Do you miss anything?
Do you know what people ask me that? The only thing I miss is what I call Canadian sanity. So Costa Rican culture is one thing, but you remember I'm North American, so I live more amongst North Americans, right? And being immersed amongst North Americans, and then remember, even Canada's not sending their best, right? You get involved in these people that have really weird ideas about things, right? That you wouldn't even just have a conversation. It'd be like you and I, we wouldn't have a conversation about abortion.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or as a Canadian, you wouldn't have a conversation about that, thinking that universal health care was really not a good thing. You know what I mean? Those sort of things. And so you're surrounded by people who want to have those kinds of conversations. And you're just like, oh, no. And to me, it's just not sane. And so I always, what I call, I miss is Canadian sanity. And I didn't understand. It's because we just don't talk about those things. Just that it's just not conducive conversations to.
Yeah.
That you're really so yeah, because I've been here long enough that I got all my iPhones and iPads and all those fun things. I got a nice TV and I drive a decent car, and I mean, hell, what more could you want?
Good Mexican or Chinese food.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's something I miss. Is I'm from Vancouver, and and I miss excellent Asian food. So yeah, that could be one of them. Yeah.
How do you obtain a visa?
Well, there's a tourist visa. And again, for those people that are really on a budget, you can do what a lot of people do and come down here on a tourist visa and leave the country every 90 days and come back in, which could be a trip to Nicaragua or Panama.
People do that.
And all the time and come back in. And I've been here for years doing that.
So if you stay for 90 days and go to Nicaragua, how long do you have to stay out of the country?
Well, it's supposed to be.
Is it 90 days?
No, it's supposed to be. It used to be 72 hours and everything, but now most people come back in 24 hours. Some people come back on the same day. It depends on what border guard or what border crossing you're at. And, but there's all these expat forums of all these people that do all this, and I used to do it many years ago too. Well, that will advise you on the latest sort of temperature of each border crossing, and you know, and how not to get a guard that's going to say, "Oh no, you have to stay 72 hours or whatever."
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. Kind of skirts their residence program and their immigration policy. And again, they're not sending their best. And so when you get people like this, they tend not always to be the most desirable people you want living in your country.
Yeah. In Europe, it's a little bit different. So if you can stay in the Schengen zone, there's certain countries in Europe for 90 days. And then you have to leave and you can't come back for 90 days.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And for a lot of these nomad workers and everything like that, and some now retirees, they just renting and they go somewhere else for 90 days.
You know? Yeah.
So it's like, oh, yeah, well, that works.
Yeah.
They could come to Costa Rica for 90 days.
I did a podcast on digital nomads.
Yeah.
And they lived the life.
Yeah.
So.
Just on the residence, because we talked about that.
Yes.
That's, you know, most people, of course, don't do that because they have retirement. It's pretty straightforward. We have called what's rentista, right? Which is if you can show an income of $2,500 a month from a reliable source, such as a IRA or something like that, an annuity or something like that, you can come under what's called rentista. Take you all in all about a year to obtain. And then if you're a pensionado, you can come in, and I think now it's $1,000 a month. Don't quote me. It used to be $1,500, and I heard they lowered it. But it was pension, you know, which is pensionado, which is $1,500 a month. But it might be $1,000, like I said. I heard they lowered it. And then you can come in on inversionista, which is investment. So you can purchase, and I think it's now $150,000, land, real estate, and including even a car. As long as it adds up to $150,000, you can come in under inversionista. And if you're a little bit short of that, you've got a good lawyer and everything and a creative accountant, they can get you to $150,000 as long as you're not stretching it too much. And that's another thing I really stress to people is to spend the money, hire a lawyer, an immigration lawyer, not all purpose.
Right.
And it costs, all said and done, to your card in hand, about $2,000. And it's well worth the money.
Oh, yeah.
But
absolutely.
Again,
especially if you don't know the language.
If you're on a real budget and don't have the money, you can do the process yourself. And there's these online Facebook groups like Where Do Gays Talk, you know, that people will help you and walk you through the process.
Gotcha. So,
I guess one thing, if you didn't mind, Mark, just as a, not necessarily a plug for my group, but just to let people know that are thinking about coming to Costa Rica or exploring, traveling, or living here, we have a lesbian and gay expat group that has 1,500 members, and the group, just like your group, has all of these people that are just eager to share knowledge and help people.
And yeah, that's your group. And what's the name of it?
LGBT Expats of Costa Rica.
Gotcha.
And it's a Facebook group, and it's moderated like yours, and so it's not full of junk. And so I highly recommend it for people, and really helps people explore this safely.
Yeah. That's where I found you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, I was going to ask you, and I'll ask you at the end of the podcast, where else can we find you, your hotel and stuff
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so are there any cons living there for 18 years, would you say?
I guess going into this new phase of my life, into retirement, semi-retirement, I've contemplated what it would look like returning to Canada. And it's really just, it just doesn't feel in the cards. I feel I can access adequate health care should I need it here. So I feel okay with that. And I really just feel I would be kind of bored to death. Because I'm still one of these people that just likes the adventure and kind of the unpredictability of it all. right? Yeah. And that's not necessarily a positive thing. Sorry, let me get rid of that. That's not necessarily a positive thing. A lot of people, this unpredictability can be a negative thing, but it keeps life interesting. And so I feel I'm here. And I'm really happy about that because I've been one of these people that always thinks the grass is greener somewhere else. So if somebody was to ask me this question, if I could be doing anything, anywhere, what would that be doing and where would that be? And I, for the longest time in Costa Rica, I've got to say exactly what I'm doing and where. And when I was living in Canada, which is a great country, I couldn't say that. It was like, oh, but you know, I hear Mexico's really fun. And wow, Asia, that's really, what about down under? Europe, oh my God. And I don't do that anymore.
That's
and I
great.
Think that, yeah, and I think that those places are wonderful places and places I want to visit or have visited and everything, but I don't feel that it's going to be any better.
Well, that means you found your home.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're comfortable. Know.
But I keep that loose.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about relocating to Costa Rica?
Join our group.
Yes.
No, really, because it would really help you and you can just explore it at your own speed and with no judgment and you can ask stupid questions and be and also look at traveling here and then meet up with some expats and look at where they live and how they live and just see, is that really for me? And then take a test run before you buy the car. And make sure that you've done that and talk to people that try and find people that live here for quite a while who are not trying to sell you something, very important,
right?
And who are living a life that you think is you kind of aspire to, like it's kind of a healthy, they're not a kind of a crazy person or something like that. Unless you are too and you're resonating with them, that might be good. But you know what I mean? It's just because somebody's living in a shack with a solar panel and gets his water from rain and it all kind of looks, oh yeah, that sounds kind of good. And it's like, you need to talk, get another opinion.
right, absolutely. Where can we find you on social media for your, like, if somebody wanted to visit your hotel or come down?
Well, my hotel is Hotel Banana Azul, and of course it's hotelbananaazul.com. Bananaazul.com. So yeah, if you want to come down and see what the Caribbean side, and also you can explore the rest of the Costa Rica at the same time, I please welcome you. We're not a gay place, but definitely gay friendly. It was interesting. Just this week, we had about 6 gay couples, which I thought, oh, must be gay.
Wow, that's
weird.
Wow.
Yeah. And like obvious gay couples. And so, and they can also email me at colin@bananaazul.com. So if they wanted to reach me there, I think the best way is just to join our group, the Expats Costa Rica on Facebook. And you can find me on there. I'm the moderator and it's easy to
find. The admin.
Yeah. The admin. Yeah. And so, yeah, and I don't pretend to have all the information about Costa Rica. The great thing in the group, there's people living all over the country there and have for many years and are giving really good advice about living in Costa Rica and those certain areas and what you can expect.
Great. Well, thank you, Colin. Appreciate you being here, taking the time and talking to our audience. It was wonderful. Learned a lot. And a lot of people will be learning more about Costa Rica because of this podcast.
Thanks. And I'm honored that you chose me to be on your show.
Pleasure, sir. We will talk soon.
All right.
Take care now.
Take care, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.